Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, December 17th. Midland Memorial Hospital says fewer beds being assigned to COVID patients. Overall occupancy numbers at Midland Memorial still at 86%. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. Midland Health has converted beds in the hospital from COVID status to regular status, which officials believe will help with increasing occupancy, even as those with COVID-19 are dropping. Midland Health officials started converting 14 beds, including 4 in the ICU, to regular status because of need. That need could be seen Wednesday in the daily report as 255 of the 295 rooms are occupied, according to Midland Health. That is an 86% occupancy rate. The number of rooms occupied by COVID patients is 77, 19 in the critical care unit, and 58 in the COVID ward. Quote, "We converted 10 beds back to regular medical surgical beds to help alleviate some of the backlog of regular medical surgical patients," said Tessa Richardson, public relations manager for Midland Health, in an email. Continuing the quote, "We also had to convert 4 ICU beds back to regular ICU beds because of need. Some of these are patients who have recovered from COVID and no longer need isolation, but are still here with lingering effects," end quote. Richardson wrote that 9 patients in the regular ICU are patients who have debilitation from COVID and have been here for weeks, but are not able to be transferred or discharged, end quote. Quote, "This will lower our COVID room numbers, but total census is still increasing," Richardson wrote. Other metrics from the Wednesday report included that the percentage of COVID rooms occupied compared to total rooms is down to 26%, the lowest percentage since November 2nd. Also, 22 of the 37 patients using ventilators are COVID patients. Lastly, 29.2% of the COVID tests performed at Midland Health facilities through Tuesday were positive. A man in his 40s was the 172nd Midland County resident to die from COVID-19 during the pandemic, and the 27th in December. The man, who had underlying health conditions, died Tuesday. He was being treated at Midland Memorial Hospital. For the first time since at least late October, the Midland Health Department reported fewer than 100 COVID-19 cases on a Tuesday. The 97 cases were 19 less than last week and brought the total number of cases, confirmed and unconfirmed, to 12,045. That includes the 10,022 cases that have been confirmed, according to the city. An unconfirmed case, quote, "is reflective of the number of positive test results received from testing locations. The patients have been notified by the testing location of the results. However, the patients have not been contacted by the Midland Health Department yet to confirm residency, gather their close contacts, or to advise them on guidelines," according to the city.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing to read another front page article from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Thursday, December 17th. Election. Booker says win over Fuller was a surprise, by Stuart Doreen. Michael Booker's life changed Tuesday night by virtue of his Midland ISD District 1 runoff victory over James Fuller. He has become the toast of East Midland. Text messages, calls, social media. The interaction with the community has been constant after news spread of his lead after early voting and subsequent victory. "I have never had so much recognition," Booker said Wednesday. Booker will become the first representative of District 1 not named James Fuller since 1988. That's something he expects will take some getting used to. He compared the feeling to U.S. Marine Corps boot camp in that there will be that what did I get myself into, period. But as he said, once he got into that training, it flowed like a well-oiled machine. Booker called his runoff election night experience a shocking one. He said he was having trouble bringing up results and didn't know about his lead after early voting until after District 2 City Councilman John Norman called. Norman said, "Congratulations." I said, "What are you talking about?" Booker said Wednesday. "I saw the numbers and my heart fell into my stomach. I am actually winning. It was a surprise." His lead grew from 50 votes to 87, and at the end of the night, Booker collected around 58.1% of the 537 votes, according to Midland County's unofficial final count. It was a reversal of fortunes for Booker, who placed second during the general election on November 3rd. He said Wednesday finishing second more than 1 month ago didn't mean much because both candidates started over from zero and had to campaign again. He said he spent those days knocking on doors, talking on the phone, texting, making social media videos, and doing whatever he could to reach voters he knew were going to vote. He's looking forward to joining the next school board and being that voice the community needs to hear. He repeated his campaign comments about wanting to support teachers and students. He said that transparency is important because the people in his district need to know what is going on. "I want to tell the community thank you," Booker said. "I appreciate their trust and going out and voting again."
MISD cases dropped to lowest number since October. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. Three schools recorded 42% of the COVID cases inside Midland ISD this past week, according to information from the district's website. The 100 total cases, students and staff, reported last week was a 29% drop from the previous week and the lowest total for a full week going back to late October. Midland ISD reported Lee High School had the most cases, 16, from the week beginning December 7th. Midland High was second with 14, and San Jacinto Junior High was third with 12. The next largest case counts were 6 at Lee Freshman High School, Alamo Junior High, and 5 at Yarbor Elementary. The district reports there have been 883 cases since July. Midland High leads with 146, and Lee is second with 145. San Jacinto is third with 51.
Hello, this is Cindy, continuing to read from the MRT for Thursday. Gift Guide 2020. Midland businesses offer shopping close to home. Many local businesses have been attending markets or promoting their business through social media. Here is a list of Midland businesses that offer holiday gifts. Museum of the Southwest memberships start at $40 for individuals, $60 for households, and go up to $1,200 for the President's Club membership. Memberships include free admission to the Juliet and Fred Turner Jr. Memorial Art Gallery, Frieda Turner Durham Children's Museum, closed for coming renovations, and Marion West and William Blanton Blakemore Planetarium, plus unlimited planetarium dome shows along with other benefits. For more information, visit museumsw.org/get-involved/membership. Tall City Brewing Company, growlers, merchandise, and canned beers are available at local grocery stores. The brewery also has e-gift cards available at tallcitybrewing.com. Found Furnishings has unique gifts for family and friends. With a constantly rotating inventory, shoppers can find one-of-a-kind gifts. It's also the perfect place to pick up some grandma's mild snack mix. Plain and Chisel will also have a pop-up in the shop where people can order cutting boards. Found Furnishings is open at 428 Andrews Highway, noon to 3 p.m., Thursday through Saturday, or shop 24/7 at foundmidland.com. Pickup time slots for curbside are also available. Midland Meat Company will have cuts for every meat lover. Get all the seasonings and more at 2705 North Big Spring Street. The store is open 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday and 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday, or look online at midlandmeatco.com/index.php. Passage Goods, a Western-style pop-up shop, has everything from jewelry to Stetson hats and leather bags. To look at gifts available, visit passagegoods.com. Ally Outdoors has a variety of options for gun enthusiasts. Ally Outdoors, 201 Spring Park Drive, is open 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday and noon to 5:30 p.m. Sunday. For more information, visit Ally, A-L-L-Y, outdoors.com. Velvet Mesquite Boutique has 2021 planners for Type A personalities who enjoy being organized. The shop, located in the micro market, also has candles and stationery along with other trinkets to brighten anyone's holiday. For more information about the store, visit velvetmesquite.com. Susie's South 40 Confections has a treat for everyone's sweet tooth. The candy store also has a gift shop and gourmet food section. Owner Susie Hitchcock Hall has also released a cookbook in time for the holidays. mrt.com/lifestyles/article/Susie's-South-40-confections-owner-create-1577205.php. C. Skeller Sports will have a gift for anyone who likes the outdoors. With ski season in full swing in New Mexico and Colorado, Ski Scaler Sports has the latest in Patagonia and the North Face. The store at 3327 West Wadley Avenue is open 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday, and from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday. For more information, visit facebook.com/Ski Scaler Sports. Spirit Creations is a place to get gifts and also get something embroidered. The shop stocks greeting cards, candles, and the brand Rifle Home. Look at the inventory at spiritcreations.co/ or visit the storefront at 3211 West Wadley Avenue, number 23. Hours are 10 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. Monday through Friday and 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Saturday. The Botanical Boutique has gifts for any plant lover. Shop in-store at 200 Spring Park Drive, number 303, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Wednesday through Friday, and 10 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. Saturday. For more information, visit facebook.com/thebotanicalboutique. Gift card to Midland Eateries. Help support local eateries by gifting friends and families with gift cards from local restaurants. The Garlic Press, Opal's Table, Toro's Cafe, Librado, Desert Vegan, and other local eateries are offering gift cards for the holiday season. Want to support other small businesses in Midland? Check out Small Midland on Instagram for other local businesses with great holiday gifts. Last-minute shopping? The Midland Downtown Farmers Market will be open on Saturday. Children can bring letters to Santa and put them in the magic mailbox. There will be Christmas cookies, coffee, handcrafted gifts, cool season produce, canned items, and bath and body products. J.C. Lewis. Region likely enters final day with restrictions, by Stuart Doreen. Restrictions put into place by the state because of higher COVID hospitalization rates are likely entering the final day in the region that includes Midland. On Wednesday, the Department of State Health Services showed that not only did the percentage of COVID-19 patients in the hospital, compared to total number of patients, stay below 15% as it had the five previous days, but it actually dropped below 14% for the first time in a month. The percentage moved from 14.54% to 13.6%. That means the percentage would have to increase by 1.41% Thursday. The last time there was such an increase was November 16th, according to the DSHS website. An increase like that, however, seems to be unlikely, as Midland health officials showed Wednesday that they have dedicated less space in its hospital for COVID patients. The last time the percentage in the region J, as it is known, was that low was November 15th, 12.79%. The region includes the cities of Midland and Odessa and the following counties. Also includes Andrews, Brewster, Crane, Ector, Glasscock, Howard, Jeff Davis, Loving, Martin, Midland, Pecos, Presidio, Reeves, Terrell, Upton, Ward, and Winkler. Should that percentage stay below 15.0% in the region for one more day, then state-imposed restrictions on businesses, including restaurants and bars, will be lifted, according to Governor Greg Abbott's executive order. At that point, businesses, including restaurants, would be allowed to return to 75% occupancy. Restrictions went into place in late November after percentages had climbed higher than 15.0% for 7 straight days. Odessa hospitals excluded from first round of vaccines by Caitlin Randall. After missing out on the first round of coronavirus vaccines distributed by the state this week, Odessa's 2 hospitals will instead be included in the second shipment, officials confirmed Wednesday. Medical Center Hospital President and CEO Russell Tippin told the Reporter-Telegram that while they were confirmed to receive a vaccine this week, a glitch with the state delayed that shipment. They're now expecting to receive 2,500 doses the week of December 21st. When we turned our stuff in and got our confirmation email, we figured we were done, Tippin said. But apparently there was one step remaining, and so that kicked us off the list. That last step was 2 electronic signatures they didn't know were needed on their forms, he said. He added they were told their paperwork was completed and they should be on standby to receive an allotment. We thought that we had done everything necessary on our part, and then, for lack of a better term, on a technicality, they knocked us off the list, Tippin said. You can imagine the shock we experienced when we saw that list, and nobody in Odessa was on that list. He said state officials later admitted the mistake was a miscommunication on their part, but that did little to ease MCH officials' worries as cases in Odessa approach 11,000. Tippin said his main concern is getting frontline hospital workers immunized as fast as possible, and they'll move quickly to make that happen when the first doses do arrive. If it's possible to give out 2,500 doses in one day, we'll do it, even if we have to stay all night, he said. Odessa Regional Medical Center also didn't make the cut for the first round of vaccines, but rather than a paperwork error, Chief Medical Officer Dr. Rohith Saravanan said they didn't request enough doses to be included in the first shipment. The Pfizer vaccine is available only in shipments of 975 doses because it requires sub-zero temperatures, he said. However, the Moderna vaccine does not have the same requirement, so ORMC is expecting to receive 400 doses of that vaccine next week. There's no difference in the effectiveness of the vaccines, and both require 2 doses given a few weeks apart, Saravanan said. The vaccines are not interchangeable, meaning a person couldn't receive an initial dose of the Pfizer vaccine and a second dose of the Moderna vaccine. A stipulation in hospitals' contracts with the state is that the state guarantees they'll ship the same number of vaccines shortly after the first shipment to ensure everyone who receives the vaccine is properly immunized, according to Saravanan. Despite being excluded from the first allotment, Saravanan said they weren't disappointed because there's only a week difference between the first and second rounds of shipments. For the community to see a decrease in the burden, it's going to take 4 to 6 weeks minimum from the time the vaccine comes out and is given to multiple people, he said. A week difference in that timeline is not a big deal. As long as we're in the first several allocations, we're happy. And while a vaccine might be considered a light at the end of the tunnel against the coronavirus pandemic, Saravanan noted that the outbreak won't end overnight. We're reaching sort of the end of the tunnel, but we're still in the tunnel, he said. The day the vaccines come out, nothing magical happens. Nothing changes on that day. We still have to keep all our precautions in place. We still have to do exactly what we were doing before to help prevent this from spreading further so we can come out on the other side in good shape, he said. Council Honors Light City Manager Courtney Sharp by Caitlin Randall. After the recent death of former City Manager Courtney Sharp, the Midland City Council on Tuesday presented a proclamation in his honor and read a letter from his family. Sharp, 53, died December 5th. He left his position in September because of health issues. In a letter that was read by Mayor Patrick Payton during Tuesday's council meeting, Sharp's family remarked on his 12-year career with the city manager's office. "I remember Courtney calling me the night the council selected him to be their next city manager," the letter read. "He was both excited and scared to death. He said he felt totally out of his league, but I knew otherwise. I may be a little biased, but I knew all along they picked the best man for the job." Sharp's family also said that he never took credit for the city's accomplishments and instead attributed any successes to the mayor and city council. "As we move forward, we ask everyone to honor Courtney's memories by doing what he did best. Love each other, serve others, put God before anything else, make Midland the best town in Texas, and stop at the lemonade stand," his family said in the letter. Sharp began his career in local government in the Texas Panhandle as a government services program coordinator before being hired as an assistant city manager in Canyon. He then served as city manager in Mount Pleasant for 4 years before moving to Midland.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, December 17, 2020. Playoffs continue. Lee's Mikey Serrano, 4, Michael Valles, 6, and Shamar Davis celebrate in front of the student section after a touchdown Friday at Grande Communications Stadium. LHS beat El Paso Montwood 66-21 to advance to the area round of the playoffs. The Rebels will face Euless Trinity Saturday night at Globe Life Park in Arlington. A very electric Christmas is at WNPAC. Lightwire Theater will present A Very Electric Christmas, 3:30 p.m. and 7:30 p.m. today at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. The story starts with Santa's helpers putting the final touches on presents as a young bird named Max and his family head south for the winter. Max gets blown off course during a snowstorm and ends up alone at the North Pole. As he attempts to make his way home, he encounters caroling worms, dancing poinsettias, nutcracker soldiers, mice, and even a rat king. For more information, visit wagnernoel.com. MCPL has digital resources for job seekers. Midland County Public Libraries has a new digital resource for job seekers. BrainFuse includes a Job Now platform that includes resume templates, interview tips, and up-to-date job listings, according to a press release from MCPL. Professional job coaches are available 2 to 11 p.m. to offer interview practice and resume suggestions. Practice tests and study guides for various professional certifications are also available through the platform. Job Now also can help with navigating unemployment benefits. MCPL also has Vet Now for veterans looking for work or needing information about benefits and eligibility. Vet Now's live coaches can help veterans translate their military job duties to marketable job skills to list on a resume, according to the release. Job Now and Vet Now are available for free to all Midland County Public Library cardholders and can be accessed from any computer or device. Find these resources on the library's website under the Digital Resources tab by clicking Electronic Resources A to Z. Drive-through holiday parade set for Saturday. The Midland County Public Library and Midland County Sheriff's Office are hosting a drive-through holiday parade 6 to 9 p.m. Saturday at the Horseshoe parking lot. The event will allow spectators to view stationary parade floats from their vehicles. Parade participants will remain with their float and not gather with others during the event, according to a press release from the county. Traffic will be restricted to one way only, with spectators entering the parking lot from Garfield Street and exiting onto the Interstate 20 service road. Midland Health has two testing sites. Midland Health has received funding from the city that will allow COVID-19 testing at two sites, Midland Memorial Hospital, West Campus, and MLK Jr. Community Center. The West Campus testing site will operate 8:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 12:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. weekdays and 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturdays. The MLK Center, 2300 Butternut Lane, will operate 12:30 to 4:30 p.m. weekdays. Anyone who has been exposed or is symptomatic can call 68 Nurse, 686-8773, to make an appointment at the drive-through testing site. The test is free for those who are scheduled. Insurance information will be collected from those who are insured. Health Department is providing services. The Midland Health Department is providing clinical services by appointment only. Appointments will be scheduled from 8:15 a.m. to 3:45 p.m. Monday through Friday. To schedule an appointment, call 681-7613. Today in history. Today is Thursday, December 17, the 352nd day of 2020. There are 14 days left in the year. On this date, in 1933, in the inaugural NFL Championship football game, the Chicago Bears defeated the New York Giants 23-21 at Wrigley Field. In 1975, Lynette Squeaky Fromm was sentenced in Sacramento, California, to life in prison for her attempt on the life of President Gerald R. Ford. She was paroled in August 2009. In 2001, Marines raised the Stars and Stripes over the long-abandoned American embassy in Kabul, Afghanistan. 1 year ago, Joe Biden released a doctor's report saying that the 77-year-old former vice president was healthy, vigorous, and fit to successfully execute the duties of the presidency. Today's birthdays. Pope Francis is 84. Actor Bill Pullman is 67. Country singer Tracy Byrd is 54.
Obituaries and death notices from the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Thursday, December 17th. Robert Bob Lewis Halverson passed away peacefully December 15th. Bob was born March 5th, 1927, in Buffalo, New York, to Esther and George Halverson, one of five children. After moving to West Texas, he met Emma Jean Jones of Columbus, Mississippi, and they were married on March 28, 1953. After 33 years together, Jean passed away in August of 1986. He is survived by his wife Evelyn, son Robert Brent Halverson, and wife Kate of Sarasota, Florida, son Barry Dewitt Halverson and wife Ina of Midland, daughter Betsy Halverson Colburn and husband John of Colleyville, daughter Stephanie Hall Wilson and husband Mark of San Antonio, daughter Hillary Hall Hager of Dallas, son Aaron A. Hall of Midland, six grandchildren and two great-grandsons. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. A private family burial ceremony will be planned. In lieu of flowers, the family suggests donations could be made to Midland Memorial Foundation, 400 Rosalind Redfern Grover Parkway, Midland, Texas, 79701, or Manor Park, Inc., 2208 North Loop 250 West, Midland, Texas, 79707. Robert Calvin Turner, Bobby, to his friends and family, went to be with our Lord and Savior on Saturday, December 12th. Bobby was born November 12, 1958, in Odessa, to Marvin and Linda Turner. Preceded in death by his father, Robert Marvin Turner, Bobby is survived by his beloved wife of 41 years, Sue Turner, his children Sam Turner, Thomas Turner, Emily and Shamar Freeman, and his grandchildren, and another grandson on the way, his mother Linda Turner, brother Roger Turner and wife Lisa, and sister Rebecca Thomas and husband Billy, along with loving nieces and nephews. Arrangements are under the management of Nally Picklin Welch Funeral Home in Midland, where visitation is scheduled for Friday, December 18th, from 5 to 7 p.m. at the branch at NPW. Funeral services will be at Greenwood Baptist Church on Saturday, December 19th, 11 a.m. Graveside service to follow at Greenwood Cemetery. Online condolences may be made at Nally Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory. Victor Gregory Mays of Midland passed away on December 12th in Midland due to complications of COVID. A celebration of life will begin with a rosary on Thursday, December 17th at 7 p.m. at St. Anne's Catholic Church. A memorial mass will be held at 2 p.m. on Friday, December 18th at St. Anne's Catholic Church with Monsignor Larry Droll officiating. Inurnment will follow in the Memorial Garden Columbarium, courtyard of St. Anne's. Victor Gregory Mays is preceded in death by his father, Albert Mays, and his stepfather, Julio Morales. Greg is survived by his beloved wife, Cindy, and their children, Dylan, Jackson, and Reagan, Amy, Stephen, Alex, Eric, Madison, Alec, and four precious grandchildren, his mother, Virginia Morales, brother Albert Mays, and wife, Violetta, in-laws, Philippe and Celia Morales, brother-in-laws, Jerry Morales, Novert Morales, and spouse, Wendy, aunts, uncles, and numerous nieces and nephews. Memorials may be given to Youth Activity Center at St. Anne's Parish. Gifts can be mailed to the parish or credit card can be used by calling the St. Anne's Parish office at 432-682-6303. Arrangements are entrusted to Willowbrook Funeral Home of Midland. To place online condolences, please visit www.willowbrk.com. Betty Marie Stark, 85, of Midland, passed away on Monday, December 14th in Lubbock. A public viewing will be held on Sunday, December 20th from 4 p.m. to 9 p.m. The family will not be present during those hours due to COVID-19. There will be a private family service held on Monday, December 21st. Live stream will be available at 12 p.m. on Monday at www.npwelch.com. Burial will be held at Rest Haven. She is survived by her children, Debbie Owen and Bill Stark. Chris Waxman, 45, of Midland, passed away on Monday, December 14th at Midland Memorial Hospital. A rosary service is scheduled at 7 p.m. Monday, December 21st at St. Anne's Catholic Church. Memorial Mass will take place at 1 p.m. Tuesday, December 22nd at St. Anne's Catholic Church. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Henry Alexander, age 75, of Midland, passed away December 14th. He is survived by his wife, Judy Alexander, sons Antonio Alexander, Dennis Alexander, a daughter, Iris Alexander, and a sister, Alice Young. Visitation will be Friday, December 18th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home and Chapel. Masks are required at all times during visitation. Herbert F. Bud Bowles, 93, of Midland, passed away on Friday, December 11th. A private graveside service at Rest Haven Memorial will be held on Saturday, January 9th at 3 p.m. There will be a celebration for Bud's life when we can gather safely. Detailed obituary will follow. Floral offerings may be brought to Nally Picklin Welch Funeral Home in Midland. Any charitable donations may be made to the First Presbyterian Church of Midland or a charity of your choice.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, December 17th, 2020. Front page. Stop the spread. Wear a mask. Protect yourself and others against COVID-19. Hovind, first Hispanic mayor of Odessa. New mayor says he wants spending investigation. City of Odessa mayoral candidate Javier Hovind breathes a sigh of relief after first looking at the early voting results for the city's runoff elections on Tuesday night at the Ector County Republican headquarters. Eli Hartman, Odessa American. By Federico Martinez, F-M-A-R-T-I-N-E-C at OAOA.com. Odessa's newly elected mayor, Javier Hovind, on Tuesday vowed that once he takes office, he will immediately call for an investigation of the city's finances for the past 8 years. Hovind, who for years has accused the city of misspending taxpayer dollars and lacking transparency, defeated former Councilman Dewey Bryant in Tuesday's runoff by a vote of 3,662 to 2,277. The voters saw through the lies and supported me because they want someone to hold the city accountable, and that's what we're going to do, Hovind said. The first thing we need to do is form a committee to investigate the city's spending. We need to know where we are financially and where our commitments are. I know I'm going to have a battle with that. I can tell you now, I'm not going to be a popular person at City Hall. Councilwoman Mary Willis said Wednesday an independent audit is done every year on city finances and that any new committee or investigation would require a vote of City Council, which has 7 members. Willis also said she hopes the council will eventually come together. Councilman Steve Thompson said he is baffled by Hovind's claims that the city has misspent tax dollars. I have no idea what he's talking about, Thompson said. I've been on council for a month and I've seen no evidence of impropriety, but I'll keep an open mind. Thompson said he checked with City Attorney Natasha Brooks, who confirmed that any kind of investigation would need the approval of a majority of council. But I'm not looking for a fight with anyone, Thompson said. I'd like to congratulate the new mayor and council members on their wins, and I'm looking forward to working together with them for the betterment of the city. That's my only agenda. Bryant, who decided to run for mayor after terming out as the District 2 City Council representative, did not return phone calls seeking comment. City Manager Michael Marrero on Wednesday did not directly address Hovind's allegations that the city has been misspending taxpayer dollars. Marrero did say city administrators and staff will make whatever information Hovind requests available. We look forward to working with Mayor Hovind and all the new council members and will provide whatever resources and assistance needed, Marrero said. Bryant and Hovind were forced into a runoff after neither candidate during the November 3rd general election garnered 50% of the vote plus one, which is required to be declared the winner. Bryant received 43% of the vote during the general election, while Hovind snared 40%. The results were vastly different during the runoff election. Hovind built what turned out to be an insurmountable lead in early voting, capturing 2,519 votes compared to 1,568 for Bryant. The contest between both men was sometimes bitter and often heated, with supporters from both sides accusing each other of running negative campaigns that distorted their candidates' records. Hovind focused on money spent on downtown Odessa, specifically the Marriott Hotel and Convention Center. Hovind said he doesn't believe that bad blood will spill over into the new city council. One of his top priorities will be to try being a consensus builder with council and earn their confidence. I know we're not always going to agree, Hovind said, but if someone on the council presents an idea and can explain how and why it will best serve the community, I will be the first to support it. I want everyone's voice to be heard. Current council members Detra White and Tom Sprawls on Wednesday did not respond to phone calls or emails seeking comment. Hovind served as District 5 councilman from 1996 to 1999 before abruptly resigning prior to the end of his second term. He later ran in 2010 but lost to Dean Combs. Everyone has always speculated why I resigned in 1999, Hovind said. At the time, there was a voting bloc among districts 1, 2, and 3, and they controlled council. They controlled who on council received information. I was just there twiddling my thumbs, and I was ineffective. I didn't believe that I was able to serve my district. I stepped down with the hope that my replacement could be more effective. In 1998, Hovind told the Odessa American he was resigning to spend more time with family. In 2010, He told the OA he had to help his family through a private matter. At his first council meeting, Hovin, who said he is opposed to abortion, said he will ask council to support a resolution declaring Odessa as a sanctuary for the unborn. He has scheduled a community prayer rally from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. December 19th on the west lawn of the Ector County Courthouse. Hovin campaigned as a team along with Denise Swanner, who defeated Turner in their runoff race for the at-large council seat, and Mark Mata, who defeated District 1 incumbent Michael Shelton. Hovin, Swanner, and Mata will be sworn into office and officially take their council seats during the next regularly scheduled council meeting at 6 p.m. January 12th, city officials announced on Wednesday. Hovin said he already has several items on his agenda. The purpose of the event is to pray, fast, and repent to our Lord and Savior, Hovin said. Photo: City of Odessa mayoral candidate Javier Hovin kisses his wife, Joanne, after learning of his strong lead in early voting against fellow candidate Dewey Bryant on Tuesday night at the Ector County Republican headquarters. Eli Hartman, Odessa American. Spreading the word. Sharing Hands new executive director Jonathan Campbell sits for a portrait recently in his office in Midland. Campbell is originally from North Dakota, but spent the last 6 years in Austin. Jacob Ford, Odessa American. New director looks to promote SHARE. By Ruth Campbell, R-C-A-M-P-B-E-L-L at OAOA.com. A desire to serve and help others prompted Jonathan Campbell to take on the post of executive director of SHARE, SHARE. SHARE, which stands for Sharing Hands, a Respite Experience, a nonprofit organization dedicated to caring for families where there are children with special needs. The organization was founded by Tom Jones, who recently retired. Campbell has been with SHARE for about 2 months. He came to the Permian Basin from Austin, where he most recently led a charity outreach program empowering teams of individuals into a lifestyle of service. His expertise includes team building, strategic planning, speaking, writing, and community outreach. Campbell is well-versed in servant leadership and has experience working to overcome community challenges. His passion is caring for those who need it most, a news release said. The appeal of coming to SHARE was a chance to make a difference and provide community for families who need it. It's been my experience for people who face unique challenges in life, community support, the feeling of not being alone, the feeling of having someone who understands. Those are the biggest things that I've found that are helpful to people, Campbell said. A native of Grafton, North Dakota, Campbell earned a bachelor's degree in business administration from Flagler College in St. Augustine, Florida, and a master's degree in theology from Franciscan University in Steubenville, Ohio, mostly through distance learning. He was in Austin for the past 6 years as director of social outreach at St. John Newman Catholic Church. I was working in sales right out of college about 15 years ago and enjoyed it, but I just enjoyed serving at my church more, so I wanted to make that my career path, and so I did, Campbell said. His goal at SHARE is to increase awareness 100-fold. We have an amazing treasure here that's kind of buried sometimes, Campbell said. A lot of people don't know about us, so just to really increase awareness about SHARE, what we offer and who we serve. He said he tries to get people to put themselves in others' shoes. For people who are parents, you know the challenges and struggles of just being a parent, especially in these times when we're all boarded up indoors. Now imagine that being your lifestyle. You have a child who you have to care for the vast majority of your time, of your life, and potentially for the rest of your life, so you need rest. You need community around you to support you, so that's what we do, Campbell added. Share has 7 full-time employees and about 150 volunteers. It offers services mainly in Odessa and Midland, but has some families in Big Spring. But if anyone within driving distance wants our services, we'll definitely provide them, Campbell said. Normally, parents drop their children off, and Cher cares for them and provides activities while the parents can have some time away. That's not happening right now, but we're still providing all of our support groups online for parents and siblings. We're doing a lot of holiday celebrations, social distance style. Santa's delivering gifts these next 2 weekends. He said the week of November 30th to families to their doors. We had a Halloween trunk or treat. We did a big Fiddlesticks family event out at Fiddlesticks Farms. Stuff like that where we can maintain social distance but still have events that are helpful for families. We're also doing some case management and emergency financial assistance. Some of our families are really struggling right now because of lack of employment. We're helping them out, Campbell said. The assistance piece is new, he noted. It's something that we're really enjoying. It's something that post-pandemic we're looking at expanding as well. We don't know exactly how it's going to look or even what's going to happen, but we're open to it. We'll keep trucking and see what happens, Campbell said. A lot of what Cher would normally do is on hold at the moment, but Jones, the former executive director, is teaching Campbell about them. Campbell said Jones has been a source of support for him. He's a mentor type, for sure. He's helping me for the first couple of months, and he's going to step away for a little bit before maybe being involved in the future, being someone that we can all go to. But he's very helpful, Campbell said. Asked if taking over from the founder of an organization is somewhat intimidating, Campbell acknowledged that it is. But it's a good challenge, and I like a good challenge, Campbell said. Rachel Reinert, Cher's Director of Marketing and Communications, said Campbell's heart for outreach is evident. Jonathan has been at Cher for a few short months, but has made a huge effort to connect with special families and understand their struggles. His passion and energy are infectious. Jonathan is the kind of person you always want on your team, no matter the task at hand. He appreciates Cher's legacy and the fact that he is standing on the shoulders of those before him who worked to make Cher what it is today, Reinert said in an email. Additionally, it is his personal mission to lead Cher into this next phase of growth and help more people understand why Cher's services are vital, she added. Campbell and his wife, Iman, have 2 children. She is the general manager of the Hotel Settles in Big Spring. He added that his background in social outreach work will help with his work with Cher. People need a lot of support right now. There's a lot of people out there who are hurting and people who face unique challenges. They just need to know that we're here for them, and that's what I tried to do in my career in ministry, and that's what I will continue to do here, Campbell said. He added that he would like to issue a call to action. If you know of any families who have children with special needs, definitely talk to them about Cher and refer them on. A lot of people don't know about us, so we just want to let people know who we are and what we do. If you know someone that has that lifestyle and that challenge, send them our way, Campbell said. On the net, sharewtx.org, sharewtx.org. Standardized test results gloomy. OA News at OAOA.com. Presenting results from MAP and NAEP tests, Ector County ISD Superintendent Scott Murray said the outcomes are grim. MAP stands for Measure of Academic Progress, and NAEP stands for National Assessment of Educational Progress. This is the first year ECISD students have taken the MAP, and Murray focused on reading and math for both MAP and NAEP. Murray detailed how COVID-19 has impacted students and teachers. When we talk about the COVID slide, it's real, and you can see that, especially in the area of mathematics, Murray told the Board of Trustees during their meeting Tuesday. It's a real phenomenon. These data indicate that fourth grade and eighth grade, in fact, when we look at it, even at every grade level, you can see that it has impacted our students. We also talked about our most fragile population as the most significantly impacted, and we see that's true in these data as well. As the district moves forward, Murray said, as they think about funding at the state level, we clearly have a crisis that continues to happen in ECISD as well as across the state. Today, 2.8 million children are physically attending school out of the 5.4 million children in our state, so we'll have almost half the children in our state that haven't been to school this year. Actually, haven't been to school since March. The slide continues. In ECISD, we hover around 65% face-to-face, 35% virtual. We continue to see some of those declines happening, and then some of them continue even in the classroom, Murray said. He noted that as he goes around the district, teachers are wearing masks and shields and keep their distance. The students can't share manipulatives. In the classroom, our teachers have a hard time being at their prior best. I think they're being at their best today, but they're hindered by the continued presence of this virus, and that's going to continue into the second semester, Murray said. I'm very thankful that we're going to have 30 additional days for our elementary kids next summer. That's going to make a difference. We'll invest in those kids and create a different experience for them, but this type of learning loss isn't repaired in a summer or even a semester. This is a multi-year repair opportunity for our kids. In August 2021, when school starts, Murray said, they will be serving a different type of child. I think about our pre-K kids that have never seen the faces of their teachers, and for the first time next year, they may, if things are different or better, they may get to see their teacher's face for the very first time, Murray said. Those kids have been shaped by a school experience that is very different from what it should be. So we have some work to do academically as a school system to meet these needs of our most fragile children who need extra attention, as they always have. But right now, the learning loss is just magnified because they're already fragile. So we see that in these data. He said that when the Texas legislature returns in January, that the district makes sure dollars are not taken away over the next several years. Districts lost a lot of money in 2011 that Murray said should have been used to educate kids. You can see the results of that. We can't allow that to happen again. So even though our state is certainly struggling right now, we have to make sure that education is the priority when it comes to investing in the well-being of our community, Murray said. Murray said this is the first year for the MAP assessment and not all students took it. So the data are a little skewed because in some school districts in Texas, when this was administered, their students were completely virtual, so they chose not to administer the assessment in a virtual environment, Murray said. In our system, the principals and teachers did a great job of not only administering face-to-face, but virtual as well. This year's data from a MAP perspective doesn't represent the whole of the story because some students in a virtual environment simply did not take it this year. STAR and end-of-course exams will be administered this year, but the high stakes, such as district and campus accountability, won't be tied to them. Murray said the data will be seen by teachers, families, and students, but also the public. Meeting recap, tinyurl.com/y7zpum5d. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County total cases, both confirmed and probable, 10,977. Ector County negative, 36,740, out of 48,426 tested, with 529 pending. 162 deaths. Recovered, 9,301. Active, 1,514. ECISD daily cases, 4 students, 1 staff. U.S. cases, 16,519,668 total confirmed, and 302,992 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/Y6NTPTUQ. 321 days. For 321 days, the city has fought a lawsuit brought by the Odessa American to enforce the state law that guarantees the public's right to see basic police records. Through December 4th, the city has spent $87,490.99 of taxpayers' dollars to fight releasing information on crime in Odessa.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.